It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
What was the biggest first in the Bears' 24-18 victory over the L.A. Rams? Caleb Williams' first TD at Soldier Field. DeAndre Swift's first Bears TD. Jaquan Brisker's first interception of the year. Or Doug Kramer's first two turns as a fullback?
Well, I think it was kind of DeAndre Swift. You know, I think that that was nice of him to score a touchdown. But I think that the play that set up the field goal before the half was also really good. The short pass to him, the screen that he ran, that was a good
play. It's
like
preseason, wasn't it?
Like looking like, I mean, you wouldn't have known that there was any question as to how good he was or was he worth the money or whatever. I like that all these things happened. I think it's good that Caleb threw a touchdown to Soldier Field. I expect more. I'm glad that he threw a touchdown to DJ Moore. I expect more. I don't know if I expect more of the center at fullback. I think it was good. You know, Doug Kramer's been around a while and is working hard to try to get on this team, and that was cool to see. And they did react to some of the problems that they had at the goal line, But I would say that probably the Swift plays were the difference that really mattered.
Taylor made for Swift?
Yeah, you're 100% right. It's DeAndre Swift. He had a really nice afternoon and the first Bear running back to have 70 receiving and 70 rushing yards since a guy that, as you said earlier, Mully, like we would have never got that right. Like that trivia question, never would we have gotten that right. That would have been, unless you were like related, I don't know how you would get that. But I just have to say, I love the last option. I mean, Doug Kramer's not one, but two chances as the fullback. That was really cool. And again, I also like what Eberflus said after about it, like using everybody on the roster, right? Like, you know, taking advantage of who's available, right? Because if Blassingame would have been available, Blassingame would have been in that situation. And then the question is, like, would he have been enough? Like, Kramer opened up a hole and Rashawn Johnson just followed it. I mean, he blasted the guy the first, again, here's a novel concept, blasting the first guy in another color jersey that you run up into, right? Novel concept.
That's why, to me, that was the biggest first of the ones mentioned here, because I think you have to understand and expect Caleb Williams throwing a touchdown pass. And it was his first at Soldier Field, okay. DeAndre Swift, about time. You were growing restless like a lot of people last week. About time that he not only has the holes to run through, but runs through them with authority. And so makes the right reads and gives you a glimpse of what he was in Philadelphia, in Detroit, when he was considered a Pro Bowl caliber running back. Good for him. But you got to expect that. Same with Brisker. Yeah, he's got it. All right, great splitsing. You got to pick. That defense is going to be takeaway driven. That's a turnover. Great. What Doug Kramer in the backfield represented, though, was the best growth of the week. Shane Waldron grasping the obvious and also trying to, dare I say, establish an identity when you are inside the low red zone or when you're in short yardage situations.
I was with you.
I'm making a serious point here. Stop giving me the heart for Taylor Swift just because I made a bad pun. Don't torture me. When Doug Kramer lined up in the backfield, 6'2", 300 pounds, that's more than Kerry Blassingame, yes. And that was something that with three tight ends, short yardage situation, a guard or a center in the backfield, it was, I dare you to stop this, Rams, because you're not going to be able to. Just try. And that they did it once, and then they did it again. I loved it because if you're kind of leaning into some identity, it's got to be that. You have a running back that you have a stable of running backs that are pretty good. Roshan Johnson is your downhill guy, I guess. Khalil Herbert out of action. But Doug Kramer in the backfield, to me, represented the biggest growth, and the growth was in the offensive coordinator.
the mini fridge.
I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. Biggs time, 9 a.m. on Mondays. Talking Bears with Mully and Haw. Caleb Williams received praise for not turning the ball over and his decision-making. Here he is in his own words.
The save's a little better.
Little better. All right, so is Williams being game manager the new normal and the Bears' best method to win football games?
It is right now. Baby steps. I think we've got to be patient. We were maybe a little ahead of ourselves. I thought he would be further along in terms of his accuracy. I said that during the first segment. And of all the things about Caleb Williams' arm talent, that was the one thing I thought would be most obvious. And it can be on occasion. The touchdown pass to DJ Moore, even though it was against the linebacker, it was put right where it needed to be. You see examples of that. But he's better. I think big picture-wise, you are expecting that to happen naturally because it's something that he's always been good at. The decision-making and the processing is something that you can't ever assume about a young quarterback, and which is why I think yesterday was significant, and I think the biggest part of his growth yesterday, a little better, and next week will be a little bit more. And the decision-making and not trying to do too much and forcing the issue, which we saw in Houston, which we saw in Indianapolis, in not trying to do too much, take the dump off to DeAndre Swift, and maybe he'll make 27 yards out of it. That's what we saw in preseason in a small sample size. And if that's the way that this offense is going, okay, for now, he will be great one day. I still believe that the Bears got the right quarterback and things are headed in the right direction. This is more game manager than playmaker than maybe we expected, but it was growth.
I agree. It was growth, a little bit better. Yes. Yesterday, all the conditions lined up for just needing a game manager. Now, he almost did turn the ball over the one time, right, on the sack, if I'm remembering correctly. But then there was the penalty on the Rams, so it didn't go that way. So and I thought that was more on him than the offensive line, that particular sack. I thought he held on to the ball too long. But yes, he was going to those checkdowns. What else did he do yesterday? He ran the ball a couple times, and he did it exactly the way you saw it on Hard Knocks with the whole slip and slide thing. He did it, and they were good runs. Like, but he doesn't get hit, doesn't take unnecessary hits. So that was something else that I was happy he did that I complained about last week was not take. He took what the Rams defense gave him, and that was a step in the right direction.
Well, he took some hits. They just didn't count because of defensive holding. And that kind of – I was a little worried about a couple of the hits he took. I didn't like that at all. Yeah, he was a game manager. That's exactly right. I mean, that's the term that's used here. They played the field position game. They punted the hell out of the ball, did a great job with the punter. And, they decided to win a game. And they did it by running the football, by punting the ball, and by sort of modest protecting of the ball. They didn't attempt to get out over their skis on anything. And that's how you win games. That's a good way to win a game. I agree with you. I think he's going to be better as the year goes on, and I think he's going to be a good player for his career. But he's just getting going, and they are playing teams they can beat. And the way to beat them is to welcome them into your home and then
yes.
run over them and
yes.
play a field position game and win the game.
And that's okay now.
Yes.
But I would be very cautious, anybody who's bailing on Caleb Williams right now because
his
numbers
aren't. No, I don't think anyone is. I think there's a slight improvement, as he said, a little better.
Right.
He is getting better. It was good.
These are the questions I cannot answer, right?
Well, he'll be answering questions with Mully and Haw at 7. That's the voice of Olin Krutz. What was the biggest reason DeAndre Swift's breakout game as a Bear? Was it Swift's running ability, the Bears' improved offensive line, or the Rams' bad defense? Or is this a combination of all three? Which was the biggest factor?
I'll go with pride. You know, I think he really took a beating. I think Shane Waldron really took a beating. I think Matt Eberflus really took a beating. And maybe the good mood is that they went out and they beat a guy who's a better coach than them. And they wanted to do that and they needed to do that. And they, you know, I mean, here's the beauty of the whole thing. They listened to everybody. They listened to their leadership council. They listened to all of the stuff,
You're
the
here.
Noise that was all over the place, and they responded to it. And you got a running game, and you got some, you know, they ran a good short yardage play. I got to tell you, I think that it wasn't just about stuff that looked great on the whiteboard. Oh, look at this. You're not going to believe it. No. They did some basic power football moves, and that helped the running back. That helped all the running backs that aided in the passing game. I'm just saying, I think the reason it worked is I'm sure that there was personal pride involved in it, right? But I also think that there was a change. There was a tweaking of the scheme. And they did try to be balanced, and they did change the way that they were calling the game.
I think pride is a really good way to put it, Mully. Everybody involved, but specifically, you know, this offensive line has been getting a lot of grief, and they deserved every bit of grief they have gotten. But I thought Matt Pryor had a really good game. He learned how to go second level. He is a huge human being. Him next to the center, it's like two men. I mean, that's how big that guy is. And when he got a couple steps and his momentum going, wow. I mean, so I think the offensive line was a little more prideful. And, you know, even Braxton Jones had a couple of penalties, but they were like kind of tough guy penalties. You know, like he was ticked off, I think, and he was being more aggressive. And I think you need to see that out of that group. So I think pride is the right way to look at it. And I think the offensive line took a little bit more pride in their work yesterday.
Matt Pryor, 6'7", 332. But can he play fullback?
Well, then it wouldn't be mini fridge. You know, then it okay. might be like, you
that's
know,
like freezer.
More that's dual bigger French than door fridge.
That's right.
Just ask it. Okay. So I think it's a matter of, yes, pride is important because they were challenged all week, and I think Swift started to hear some of the rumblings about what is he doing here and why are they paying him that. But I think it's also simple math. The Bears took 54 snaps yesterday offensively. DeAndre Swift had 23 touches. That's 43% of the time. He got the ball 43% of the time offensively. So these questions about Caleb Williams, the game manager, DJ Moore, the neglected wide receiver one, whoever else didn't get the ball, Cole Kmet didn't get his 10 targets again. DeAndre Swift, it was his show. It was another Swift starring at Soldier Field. It was a big stage, and he walked all over it. Yes, give me the heart sign. Everybody should be Swifties this morning if you're a Bears fan. They made sure that you would be by giving him the ball, handing it off, throwing it to him, and watching him do what he's paid well to do. All of the above.
I'm not going to take any questions.
Will the White Sox owner, Jerry Reinsdorf, invest in a new team playing now that he sent an apology letter of sorts to the fans following the team's historically awful season? Do you need concrete results instead of empty promises from the guy, or do you just want him to eventually sell the ball club?
That will be the familiar rhetoric. I think a lot of people came out of that weekend and the last home experience with the Sox at Guaranteed Rate Field with the same sentiments. Certainly they were represented in the signs and the fan base is fed up, as they should be. History was made Friday night in Detroit, not the kind of history you want to make. The manager you wanted and the broadcaster that was driven out, celebrated with a hug in a clubhouse as the Tigers go to the playoffs. The White Sox are left to pick up the pieces. They got a long way to go. Jerry Reinsdorf issued a statement, and it will be actions, not words, that dictate how you respond to this season, how you feel about what just happened. The proof will come in who they hire as a manager. What are they looking for? It'll tell you who they can afford, what they're willing to pay, and what direction they're headed. Chris Getz saying a couple weeks ago in the booth that the White Sox did not plan to be active in free agency, to me, spoke a little bit louder than a statement from the chairman. Jerry Reinsdorf took responsibility for the season that just ended miserably, and he said there are no excuses. There are none. But you've got to start over. If this is bottoming out, then you've got to have a plan. And I think that you've got to spend money. You got to spend money and grow your farm system. You can do both. There's no rule against it. So the letter was expected. I wonder if he'll meet the White Sox media, the Chicago sports media, as he said. But I think he can talk as much as he wants to talk. It will be fascinating to hear from him. But the actions, the spending, the direction, the hiring, that'll speak a lot louder than anything he has to say.
Well, agree. Actions are always going to be the bigger thing. But just from the letter, whether said out loud or written in a statement, words are easy. I understand we need to show our progress through action. And I commit to you that everyone associated with the White Sox is focused on returning this organization to the level of success we all expect and desire. So now he's on record, right? In the end, we owe it to each and every one of you. Okay, you've said it. Now let's see you put it forward and move ahead.
Yeah, I think the thing that was interesting to me about this, and I agree with him, it's ultimately a failure, and he is ultimately responsible for the failure, and there are no excuses. But I think that, you know, I'm going to cut and paste this while embracing new ideas and outside perspectives. We will do everything we can to fix this for 2025 in the future. This will include further development of players on our current roster, development within our system, evaluating the trade and free agent markets to improve our ball club, and new leadership for our analytics department. That's the one that caught my eye. So now, all of a sudden, we're not going to have contrary analytics. They're going to have a new analytics department, and this is one of the things that he's promising. I would say get the airplane fixed too while you're at it. Get like a modern airplane. You know, make this franchise less of an embarrassment to people that have to play there. And I would also think that you will be hard pressed to find anybody who is a Sox fan who doesn't believe that part of the answer is selling the team. And that's just the situation that you put everybody in. So, you know, clearly by admitting your failure and it's your responsibility, you're acknowledging that someone else would probably do it better. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And I don't know that there's a lot of people anxious to find out how Jerry has changed.
Grady Sizemore was on the station Saturday morning with Bruce and Ryan McGuffey on Inside the Clubhouse. Mm-hmm. He made a case, or they said he would be interested, and obviously he's done. You finish winning 5 out of 6. Everything's relative. What do you think about him as a candidate?
What did I say? What did I say was the precursor for returning him? I told you on Friday, if he won out, if he won the final 6 games of the season.
He won 5 out of 6.
He didn't win the final 6.
Okay, so he's not a candidate in your mind?
I don't believe so. I really enjoyed the fact that they won 5 of 6. Yep. I wish they had won 5 in a row and then, you know, kind of, if they were going to lose then. But, no, I mean, I felt like he had to win them all to be a real candidate.
There's a lot of questions in there.
Tom Ricketts, when are we going to hear from Tom? Over the weekend, Cubs legend Kyle Hendricks, White Sox ace Garrett Crochet each made their final starts for their respective teams. Who's more likely to be back next year, Hendricks or Crochet? Neither, both.
Well, I would say neither for either team. I don't know if Hendricks is willing to sign like a smaller term deal just to stay with the Cubs. I would imagine that they are going to try to get an upgrade. They want to sign another pitcher, and I think they want that money off their books. And I think that if he were willing to come back in a modest role, maybe not even as a starter, but out of the bullpen, I would think you could find a place for him, and then you'd have someone who could really help you if it came to that. But I suspect there will be a team that will let him play and that he will go somewhere else. I don't know that he's going to get paid a ton. I think Garrett Crochet is being traded. I don't think there's any chance. And I think this is interesting to me because I think it goes back to when we talk about, well, who are they going to sign? Aren't they going to sign some people? I don't think they are, because I don't think they're going to be signing front-line guys, because you sign a guy, you're going to lose 100 games next year. When are you going to actually have a winning season? Like, I think if you sign a guy, by the time his contract kicks in, by the time it's pretty much done, by the time you're good again, he's going to be out of contract. So I understand that little element of it, but I don't pretend like I'm happy about anything going on with the White Sox.
I'm going to go glass three quarters full here. I'm going to say both.
Woo!
I think Kyle Hendricks is good enough to compete as a fifth starter. You know, Tommy Hotovy has told us many times you can't have enough pitching. And I think some of those guys that are in the back end of the Cubs starting rotation would be better served, in my opinion, as relief guys that if you needed somebody to then spot start, you could have them as a three-inning opener or something like that. So I think that's a way for the Cubs to rebuild their bullpen is to move some of these fourth and fifth guys into the bullpen, my opinion. I also, if we want to believe what Jerry said, you're going to be a great message to the fans.
What?
Signing Garrett Crochet to a mega deal. See? That would be a great message to the fans. I'm not saying it's the smartest baseball decision because, as Mully points out, and we can all see, they are a ways away and he'd be coming out of the contract, but it would be a reason to go to a game every homestand because he's pitching.
Also, it would give you somebody in the clubhouse that could emerge as a leader. I thought it was very interesting. Grady Sizemore made the comparison to CeCe Sabathia when he was coming up in Cleveland. Young pitcher who, yes, he only pitched every fifth day, but he became a leader in the clubhouse. When you heard Garrett Crochet over the weekend after his final start, this is a guy who cares a lot about being a professional, setting a tone. You're right. That would be the best way for Jerry Reinsdorf not to issue a statement in words. That would be an action that would make a statement with money. Invest in a pitcher in the way that you never have. But look around Major League Baseball. Are those wise decisions to let those guys walk? Carlos Rodon, Dylan Cease. They're example after example of guys who left Chicago and flourished. So I would think Crochet has a shot. Kyle Hendricks, thank you for the memories. Your last class, Professor, was all class. And when he left the mound on Saturday, if you're a Cub fan of a certain age, remember 2016, I bet you some people had a lump in their throat. That was emotional. Hugging players on the way off the mound, I don't know if I've seen that before. Hugging Hotovy, it was terrific. I think that he will be somebody who still wants to pitch in the major leagues, and I think he's ready for a change of scenery. I do think the Cubs are ready to move on. You need somebody more certain if you're going to be a 90-win roster. Maybe that's what Craig Counsell was alluding to. But thank you, Kyle Hendricks. I think he will be a fine addition to somebody's pitching staff. I just don't think it will be the Cubs.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
What was the most interesting college football game over the past weekend for you? Notre Dame winning back some credibility after the loss to NIU. Illinois, decent Penn State loss. They were in that game for a while. And how about that Alabama-Georgia game actually living up to the hype?
Well, I'll tell you, Notre Dame, they beat Louisville. They had some help. I don't think that was Jeff Brohm's best day on the sidelines. So, actually, Marcus Freeman was the best head coach on this day, Saturday. Notre Dame had to win that game to be set up for the rest of their schedule. Penn State, they have to feel good. They're Illinois going into Penn State. The line, I have to feel pretty good about the way they competed. I know it's not a victory, but boy, that was a rugged game. They gave them all they could handle until the late interception, but that was a pretty close game. I have to say, though, the play of the weekend, you alluded to Alabama-Georgia. What a great game. Ryan Williams is a 17-year-old, and his 75-yard touchdown pass, do yourself a favor if you haven't seen it already, go watch it because you want to watch it once and then 17 more times. You can't get past his spin, his athleticism, his speed, the burst. Alabama-Georgia lived up to the hype, exceeded it maybe. Good for Kalen DeBoer and the Crimson Tide. They start 4-0. That was something I didn't expect. And that kid, still a kid at 17, one of the most electrifying players in college football right now. Fun weekend.
It was a fun weekend. As you just said, David, exceeded the hype. And maybe, some people might have tuned out because Alabama was giving it to him, right?
Yep.
Georgia roars back. And I saw when Georgia went ahead, I thought, wow, this is going to be the comeback of the ages. And then literally the next play on offense, 75 yards, Bama goes right back on top.
Yep.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was an incredible result. And they went up, what, 28-0? And so, you know, you're watching that game and it's like a blowout. And it's like, wow, I can't believe that Georgia didn't come to play at all. Then, as you say, they come back and you have the 75-yard touchdown. Williams, unbelievable. I mean, that is unbelievable for a guy to be able to meet that moment at that age. Just incredible. And I think that was, you know, clearly the best game of the weekend. And I think the Notre Dame win was very important for them. And I really, I was watching that Illini game and, man, there were just a couple, they just couldn't score. You know, they just couldn't, they stayed in that game forever. And it was really fun to see. But ultimately, you know, they got some knockout punches. And no, there are not moral victories. Although,
no.
They are still ranked 24th or
23rd? They're 24th.
Yeah.
Indiana, who is now the new hot team in the Big Ten,
that's
they're
right.
23rd. But Brett Bielema has to feel good about second straight hostile road environment.
Yes.
Second straight competitive game. They win in Nebraska.
How hard is that?
It's very
hard
difficult.
How hard is that to go to Nebraska? Then you got to go back to Happy Valley. That's
so I understand they lost the game, but you have a lot to build on if you're Illinois, and you got to feel pretty good if you're Bielema.
Yeah, I agree with that.